Chapter 7. The Baby Austin. Inside the caravan, I stood on a chair and lit the oil lamp in the ceiling. I had some weekend homework to do, and this was as good a time as any to do it. I laid my books out on the table and sat down, but I found it impossible to keep my mind on my work. The clock said 7:30. This was the twilight time. He would be there now. I pictured him in his old navy blue sweater and peaked cap, walking soft-footed up the track towards the wood. He told me he wore the sweater because navy blue hardly showed up at all in the dark. Black was even better, he said, but he didn't have a black one, and navy blue was next best. The peaked cap was important too, he explained, because the peak cast a shadow over one's face. Just about now, he would be wriggling through the hedge and entering the wood. Inside the wood, I could see him treading carefully over the leafy ground, stopping, listening, going on again, and all the time searching and searching for the keeper, who would be somewhere standing still as a post beside a big tree with a gun under his arm. Keepers hardly move at all when they're in a wood watching for poachers, he had told me. They stand dead still, right up against the trunk of a tree, and it's not easy to spot a motionless man in that position at twilight when the shadows are as dark as a wolf's mouth. I closed my books. It was no good trying to work. I decided just to go to bed instead. I undressed and put on my pyjamas and climbed into my bunk. I left the lamp burning. Soon I fell asleep. When I opened my eyes again, the oil lamp was still glowing, and the clock on the wall said 2:10. 2:10? I jumped out of my bunk and looked into the bunk above mine. It was empty. He had promised he would be home by 10:30 at the latest, and he never broke promises. He was nearly 4 hours late. At that moment, a frightful sense of doom came over me. Something really had happened to him this time. I felt quite certain of it. Hold it, I told myself. Don't get panicky. Last week you got all panicky and you made a bit of a fool of yourself. Yes, but last week was a different thing altogether. He had made no promises to me last week. This time he had said, I promise I'll be back by 10:30. Those were his exact words. And he never, absolutely never, broke a promise. I looked again at the clock. He had left the caravan at 6, which meant he had been gone for over 8 hours. It took me 2 seconds to decide what I should do. Very quickly, I stripped off my pyjamas and put on my shirt and my jeans. Perhaps the keepers had shot him so badly he couldn't walk. I pulled my sweater over my head. It was neither navy blue nor black. It was a sort of pale brown, but it would have to do. Perhaps he was lying in the wood, bleeding. My trainers were the wrong colour too. They were white. But they were also dirty, and that took a lot of the whiteness away. How long would it take me to get to the wood? 1.5 hours. Less if I ran most of the way, but not much less. And as I bent down to tie the laces, I noticed my hands were shaking and my stomach had that awful prickly feeling as though it were full of small needles. I ran towards the steps of the caravan and across to the workshop to get the torch. A torch is a good companion when you're alone outdoors at night, and I wanted it with me. I grabbed the torch and went out of the workshop. I paused for a moment beside the pumps. The moon had long since disappeared, but the sky was clear and a great mass of stars was wheeling above my head. There was no wind at all, no sound of any kind. To my right, going away into the blackness of the countryside, lay the lonely road that led to the dangerous wood. 6.5 miles. Thank heavens I knew the way. But it was going to be a long, hard slog. I must try to keep a good, steady pace and not run myself to a standstill in the first mile. Just then, a wild and marvellous idea came to me. Why shouldn't I go in the baby Austin? I really did know how to drive. My father had always allowed me to move around cars when they came in for repair. He let me drive them into the workshop and back them out again afterwards. And sometimes I drove one of them slowly around the pumps in first gear. I loved doing it, and I would get there much quicker if I went by car. This was an emergency. If he was wounded and bleeding, then every minute counted. I'd never driven on the road, but surely I wouldn't meet any other cars at this time of night. I would go very slowly and keep close to the hedge on the proper side. I went back to the workshop and switched on the light. I opened the double doors. I got into the driver's seat of the baby Austin and I turned on the ignition key. I pulled out the choke. I found the starter button and pressed it. The motor coughed once and then started. Now for the lights. There was a pointed switch on the dashboard and I turned it to S for side lights only. The side lights came on. I felt for the clutch pedal with my toe. I was just able to reach it, but I had to point my toe if I wanted to press it all the way down. I pressed it down, then I slipped the gear lever into reverse. Slowly, I backed the car out of the workshop. I left her ticking over and went back to switch off the workshop light. It was better to keep everything looking as normal as possible. The filling station was in darkness now, except for a dim light coming from the caravan where the little oil lamp was still burning. I decided to leave that on. I got back into the car. I closed the door. The side lights were so dim, I hardly knew they were there. I switched on the headlamps. That was better. I searched for the dipper with my foot and I found it. I put the headlamps on full. If I met another car, I must remember to dip them, although actually they weren't bright enough to dazzle a cockroach. They didn't give any more light than a couple of good torches. I pressed down the clutch pedal again and pushed the gear lever into first. This was it. My heart was thumping away so fiercely I could hear it in my throat. 10 yards away lay the main road. It was as dark as doomsday. I released the clutch very slowly. At the same time, I pressed down on the accelerator with my right toe and stealthily, oh, most wonderfully, the little car began to lean forwards and start into motion. I pressed a little bit harder on the accelerator. We crept out of the filling station onto the dark, deserted road. I won't pretend I wasn't petrified. I was. But mixed in with the awful fear was a glorious feeling of excitement. Most of the really exciting things we do in our lives scare us to death. They wouldn't be exciting if they didn't. I sat very stiff and upright in my seat, gripping the steering wheel tight with both hands. My eyes were about level with the top of the steering wheel. I could have done with a cushion to raise me up higher, but it was too late for that. The road seemed awfully narrow in the dark. I knew there was enough room for two cars to pass each other. I'd seen them from the filling station doing it a million times, but it didn't look that way to me from where I was. I kept going. I knew every bit of the road, every curve and every little rise and dip. Once a fox flashed out of the hedge in front of me and ran across the road with his long bushy tail streaming out behind him. I saw him clearly in the glow of my headlamps. His fur was red-brown and he had a white muzzle. It was a thrilling sight. Hazel's Wood was not on the main road. To reach it, you had to turn left through a gap in the hedge and go uphill over a bumpy track for about a quarter of a mile. If the ground had been wet, there could have been no hope of getting there in a car. But there hadn't been any rain for a week and the ground would surely be hard and dry. I figured I must be getting pretty close to the turning place now. I must watch out for it carefully. It would be easy to miss it. There was no gate or anything else to indicate where it was. It was simply a small gap in the hedge, just wide enough to allow farm tractors to go through. Suddenly, far ahead of me, just below the rim of the night sky, I saw a splash of yellow light. I watched it, trembling. This was something I had been dreading all along. Very quickly, the lights got brighter and brighter and nearer and nearer, and in a few seconds it took shape and became the long white beam of headlamps from a car rushing towards me. My turning place must be very close now. I was desperate to reach it and swing off the road before that monster reached me. I pressed my foot hard down for more speed, and the little engine roared. The speedometer went from 30 to 35 and then to 40, but the other car was getting nearer fast. Its headlamps were like two dazzling white eyes. They grew bigger and bigger, and suddenly the whole road in front of me was lit up as clear as daylight, and swish! The thing went past me like a bullet. It was so close I felt the wind of it through my open window. And in that tiny fraction of a second when the two of us were alongside one another, I caught a glimpse of its white painted body, and I knew it was the police. I didn't dare look around to see if they were stopping and coming back after me. I was certain they would stop. Any policeman in the world would stop if he suddenly passed a small boy in a tiny car chugging along a lonely road at 2:30 in the morning. My only thought was to get away, to escape, to vanish, though heaven knows how I was going to do that. I pressed my foot still harder on the accelerator. Then all at once, I saw in my own dim headlamps the tiny gap in the hedge on the left-hand side. There wasn't time to brake or slow down, so I just yanked the wheel hard over and prayed. The little car swerved violently off the road, leaping through the gap, hit the rising ground, bounced high in the air, then skidded around sideways behind the hedge and stopped. The first thing I did was to switch off all of my lights. I'm not quite sure what made me do this, except that I knew I must hide, and I knew that if you're hiding from someone in the dark, you don't shine lights all over the place to show where you are. I sat very still in my dark car. The hedge was a thick one and I couldn't see through it. The car had bounced and skidded sideways in such a way that it was now right off the track. It was behind the hedge and in a sort of field. It was facing back towards the filling station, tucked in very close to the hedge. I could hear the police car. It had pulled up about 50 yards down the road, and now it was backing and turning. The road was far too narrow for it to turn round in one go. Then the roar from the motor got louder, and he came back fast with engine revving and headlamps blazing. He flashed past the place where I was hiding and raced away into the night. That meant the policeman had not seen me swing off the road. But he was certain to come back again looking for me. And if he came back slowly enough, he would probably see the gap. He would stop and get out of his car. He would walk through the gap and look behind the hedge, and then his torch would shine in my face and he would say, "What's going on, sonny? What's the big idea? Where do you think you're going? Whose car is this? Where do you live? Where are your parents?" He would make me go with him to the police station, and in the end they would get the whole story out of me, and my father would be ruined. I sat quiet as a mouse and waited. I waited for a long time. Then I heard the sound of the motor coming back again in my direction. It was making a terrific noise. He was going flat out. He whizzed past me like a rocket. The way he was gunning that motor told me he was a very angry man. He must have been a very puzzled man too. Perhaps he was thinking he'd seen a ghost boy driving a ghost car. I waited to see if he would come back again. He didn't come. I switched on my lights. I pressed the starter. She started at once. I drove very slowly now. The track was extremely rough and rutted, and the slope was pretty steep. The little car bounced and bumped all over the place, but she kept going. Then, at last, ahead of me and over to the right, looking like some gigantic black creature crouching on the crest of the hill, I saw Hazel's Wood. Soon I was there. Immense trees rose up towards the sky all along the right-hand side of the track. I stopped the car. I switched off the motor and the lights. I got out, taking the torch with me. There was the usual hedge dividing the wood from the track. I squeezed my way through it and suddenly I was right inside the wood. When I looked up at the trees, they had closed in above my head like a prison roof and I couldn't see the smallest patch of sky or a single star. I couldn't see anything at all. The darkness was so solid around me, I could almost touch it. "Dad!" I called out. "Dad, are you there?" My small, high voice echoed through the forest and faded away. I listened for an answer, but none came.